Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, and actually it's not Paul Grant this week, but one of his associates there at Planning with Purpose, we have Danielle Olero. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Good to see you once again. We've had you on a few times in the past.
Yeah.
And Paul has got a few shows off.
Yeah.
Taking some time off, and you're going to fill us in on a little bit more of what you're involved in there, and basically education from your perspective on things like what is a will, what is probate, some of these real basic questions. So let's start that off a little. Well, first of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about how long you've been with the firm?
Yeah, so like you said, my name's Danielle Olero. I've been working here at Planning with Purpose since 2017. And so when I started out with Paul, I started out actually doing some of the planning. So working with wills, working with trusts, and creating plans with power of attorneys. And then about 3 years ago, I made the switch to really focusing on closing will estates and trust estates. So that's about 90% of what I do at the firm is actually closing the estates, whether we made the plans or whether it's somebody who had a plan made by another attorney. I step in and walk families through. And what that really means is walking families through after someone's passed away. So
everything, the stuff you do isn't necessarily plans that you guys created.
That's correct.
Did you say most of them aren't?
I would say it's about 50-50, actually.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to see the way that our plans work and then the way that other people's plans work. And I have actually seen a lot of things. I have a lot of stories. Yes.
Yeah, I've had a few estates I've had to be involved in to close, and it can be kind of hairy.
Yes, that's exactly it. So my hope is to give a little bit of background on what does it actually mean to close different kinds of estates? What are some things that people should really look out for? What are some things in a plan that are really important? And some of the things that I just see that can be pretty problematic you may not think of.
Mm-hmm.
So,
let's get right into this then. You guys sent me quite a list of different topics that we can talk about. And let's get right down to basics. Like, what is a will?
Yeah, so there's really only two main documents that I can use as an estate planner. So everybody needs a trust or a will. So a will is one of the more simple documents that we can use. And a will does really three main things. So it names a personal representative. And the personal representative, you may have heard it called an executor or an executrix, and so those are the same people. But that person is really the person who's going to step into the person who's passed away to into their shoes in order to close their estate so they can start closing out accounts, spending money, asking for records that the decedent may have been entitled to. And then ultimately, they're the ones who are going to distribute everything to the proper beneficiaries. Which leads me to the second thing that a will does, which is that it names a beneficiary. So that might be family members, friends, charities. I've even seen pets be beneficiaries.
Mm, really?
So,
I see that in TV, but that really happens, huh?
That really happens.
Yeah.
So it names your beneficiaries. And then it also gives instructions to the court. So, yes, if you have a will, that still means that we have to open up a probate, which is a court-driven process. So we give instructions to the court of how involved do they need to be. And then it says things like, I trust my personal representative, who I have chosen, and so therefore don't make them furnish a bond or something like that. So essentially, it gives money-saving clauses to say, court, don't get too involved in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Do you get involved in estates if there is no will, or does it just go straight to the state and they handle it, or where are you in that process?
Great question. So actually, there is a misconception that the estate just goes to the state and the state just takes your money if you don't have a will. That's actually not true. So there is a whole statute that says here's who can be your personal representative. It's usually going to go down family lines. So it's going to be your spouse, then it's going to be your kids, and so then we're going to look for family, who's going to actually close the estate. And then there's a statute that also says here's where your where all of your stuff is going to go. So again, here in Washington State, we're a community property state, everything typically is going to go to the spouse, and then it's going to go to your kids and down the family line. Now, this is one place, and we can come back to this a little bit later, but it's one place that I see a lot of assumptions, though, which is that if you have a blended family, there are a lot of people who don't do planning because they assume that everything's going to go to their spouse, just as I said.
Right.
Well, actually, it's going to go half to your spouse, but if you have kids from another marriage, half of what you have is going to go to your kids from that previous marriage.
If the state does it.
If the state does it, yep. Mm-hmm. So people assume that it's going to go to their spouse and everything's going to be okay. But what we find is that there's no document, and so therefore it puts the spouse in a really, really precarious situation. And I actually have several of these where they're looking at losing their home, they're looking at losing the livelihood that they thought was in place for them simply because there was no plan. So
again, as Paul always says, be sure to get at least a will or a trust, because I think he said something like at least 50% of people don't even have a will when they pass.
That's exactly right.
Or even more.
That's exactly right. So there's a lot of assumptions. There's a lot of rumors that go around that say probate's really easy and you don't really need to plan. And that is not the case. I have never had a family member come to me and say, man, I wish they hadn't planned. Man, I wish they hadn't sat down with an attorney. and really what we're after is a smooth transition, right? I think that that's ultimately. Money's the easy part. Money's the part. And honestly, when family members are coming to, that's the last thing on their minds. The first thing on their minds is how do I deal with these family dynamics? How do I make sure, as a spouse, how do I make sure that I'm secure? I'm already insecure because I just lost a spouse. But now how do I make sure that I'm financially secure? So there's a lot of emotions that are involved. And so to make sure that there is a smooth transition, it's paramount importance that you've, number one, talked about what was going to happen and really planned it out.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next subject here. What is the first thing you should do when someone passes away?
Yeah, so
as far as regards wills and...
Yes. Will, trust, you don't have anything. The first thing we tell all of our clients to do is to call us. So it's very important that you call a law firm before you do anything else. And so I usually will get to that person within about 24 hours. And the reason that that's important is because we want to make sure that people are notified first. The first thing that people often want to do is get really busy. So they start calling all of their financial institutions, they start calling a lot of people that we may or may not want to notify at that point in time. They start paying off bills, they start paying off credit cards, closing credit cards, those types of things. And we want to slow people down, because the most important thing for anybody to do is to really take care of their family, get the funeral arrangements. You probably have family coming into town. So slow down. And call the law firm, let them guide you, take care of your family, and then all of the financial stuff honestly can really wait most of the time.
Well, and then assuming that, is there anything that someone should not do during this waiting period besides what you've mentioned?
Yeah, so when you call me, the number one thing is that we can't start doing really anything until 7 to 10 days after someone passes away. That's how long it takes to get death certificates. That's going to be the key to start unlocking some of these things anyways. So like I said, the first thing is going to be to wait. But then there are a list of things that we're going to say, please don't do them. And some of them are a little bit counterintuitive. So don't close bank accounts, don't roll over IRAs, don't start making financial decisions, because those are ultimately financial decisions. They can have tax consequences, and we want to make sure that they're done correctly. Also, your bank accounts, one of the first things that banks are going to do, they hear someone's passed away, they're going to lock that account down. Mm-hmm. They're going to lock. So that's what financial institutions are going to do. So if you start calling everybody and start closing out those bank accounts, then some of the funds that you might have been anticipating to use for funeral expenses and other things are going to be closed down. Mm. Don't endorse anything, any checks or other documents that a decedent might have. So if you had a power of attorney over that person, that power of attorney ended as soon as that person passed away. So you can't sign documents, endorse checks on behalf of that other person until the court says, yes, you're the appropriate person and you can now sign things.
Yeah.
So please don't start signing things, even if you had a power of attorney.
Okay, you mentioned the death certificate. What happens then after the death certificate arrives? Then you can start doing all these things or?
Good question. So that's going to be the waiting period, and now we can begin to walk down the path of starting the probate and other things. So we now have to have the court acknowledge that you are the right person. So after the death certificates arrive, then let me guide you on the next step. So but the biggest thing is just let us guide you. One of the other big questions we get is people are coming into town and there's a car that's not being driven. So can I let my cousins from New York drive that car rather than rent it?
Well, if they're from New York, I don't know.
Exactly. Even a bigger reason that probably not. So the person's car insurance, right, is in the decedent's name. So if they get into a car accident, that is A, going to be a liability towards the estate. And B, the car insurance may not even pay for that accident. So the answer is no, unfortunately. You have to rent your own car.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and what I found, too, is at the funeral or people start wanting personal items that you had no idea were part of the trust or part of the beneficiary's list of things. They wanted to go certain places and people, I want that special rug or whatever. She said I could have it when she was alive, but you have no idea.
That's exactly it. And that was actually my next one is please don't start removing household furnishings and things. Let us guide you on what is part of the trust or the will and what is not, what has been said, yes, needs to go to this specific person and where does it go. So if there's requests that are being made, make a list of those. You can let them know that if it's not going to be taken, by somebody who's already entitled to it, maybe that's something that can be accommodated. So you can make lists, but please don't start giving things away.
Yeah, yeah, I made a big mistake on that. I did literally give away a rug to a guy, and it turns out it was in the trust to go somewhere else, and we had to drive 6 hours to go get it back, you know, and that was awkward.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You'll save yourself a lot of awkwardness if we just slow things down. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. This is another one that's really counterintuitive to people, specifically people who've lost a spouse, which is don't pay your bills yet. So don't pay your bills. You can ask for a couple of weeks extension. They're always really good about working with people. But one of the biggest things that we're going to talk about over the probate process is how we actually get rid of some of those debts and some of those bills. So you may be paying something.
We're going to find out more about what is probate. That's the next thing on our list of questions. We're talking with Danielle Olero. She's an associate of Paul Grant at Planning with Purpose. And we need to take a quick break. We'll be back in moments with more on these subjects.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show. featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week featuring Danielle Olero, an associate of Paul Grant, running us through all kinds of different subjects. What is a will in our first segment? And now we're moving on to what is probate? We always hear that term. And regardless of whether you have a will or a trust, there you'll always have to face this thing called probate. Or do you? I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So probate is essentially when you purchase a home, you get what's called title insurance, and that makes sure that the person you're purchasing the home from actually owned what you were now own, and that there's no debts or other things that are encumbering it. So probate is essentially the same thing after someone's passed away. So it is a court-driven process. So yes, there's no way of getting around the court-driven process if we're going to use a probate system. And one of the preconceived notions that we oftentimes get is that, well, I have a will, and so that means that the court's not going to get involved and I don't need probate. That's actually not true. And so,
you will have probate if you have a will, but you won't if you have a trust. Is that true?
Yes. So that's one of the major differences in doing a, this is a well, maintained and a properly planned out trust. Mm. So let's start there, and we'll talk about, in our next episode about what does a trust mean and what are the differences.
Okay.
But you always are going to need a probate in different circumstances. Number one is that it is for assets that are in a decedent's name, and they are the only name on it. So what does that mean? If you have a joint bank account with your wife, then there's a joint owner on that. So if the husband passed away in that situation, then that account would immediately go to the wife. So if there's a joint owner on it, it doesn't need to go through probate.
Mm.
Now, that also includes things like if you bring on an adult child to help you maintain your bank account, pay your bills, everything. Well, that means that when you pass away, that bank account is automatically going to go to that child.
Mm.
So that may be your intention. Some people say, well, they've been taking care of me, and that's my intent, that they get the remainder of whatever's left in my bank account. That's great. Sometimes that's all of your life savings.
Mm.
Do you want that to go to that one child and trust that they are now going to share it with their siblings?
Technically, that is what would happen if they were on the account.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of what the will says.
Regardless of what the will says, mm-hmm. It's going to go based on joint ownership, means that it's going to go to whoever else is on that bank account.
Mm.
So people oftentimes think, well, they're just a signer on the account. Well, when you actually go to the bank and ask, they are on the account as an owner.
Mm.
So that's something you may need some help in how do we actually have somebody be able to help us manage bank accounts, pay bills and everything. There are ways that we can do that. But if you put them on your bank account, that's what that's going to
be. Wow. Yeah, I could think that would really put the kibosh on a lot of plans that they thought were going to be taken care of by the will, but because here you were maybe infirmed and you needed help from that child to, like you say, write checks and pay bills. By having them on your account, that jeopardizes what maybe your intentions were with the rest of your estate.
That's exactly right. I see that a lot, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So a joint ownership's not going to need to go through probate. If you have a beneficiary designation on an account, or usually that's retirement accounts or other things, you can put beneficiary designations, life insurance policies. That's going to go based on the beneficiary designation instead
of
on the policy,
regardless of the will.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
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 So I've seen ex-spouses on there.
Yeah.
I've seen deceased siblings on there. I've seen disinherited children or even disabled children.
People forgot to change their beneficiary on their actual account.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Mm.
Yep. And so it's, again, not their intent. So so these are probate runarounds. They are tools that we can use, joint ownership, beneficiary designations, in order to avoid probate. But they're sometimes not the appropriate tool to use. And then there's one last way that here in Washington State, we have a probate. You can get out of doing probate if what is going through probate, so what is in the decedent's personal name, is less than $100,000. So So that process is called a small estate affidavit. And so if we determine that you that there's less than $100,000, then we can create something. You have to wait 40 days to use it, but we can avoid using probate if it's less than $100,000.
Yeah, I've heard this a lot of times, probate. How long should it take to close an account? Maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but probate going on for years sometimes.
It really can. It depends on the situation, depends on the family. There's a lot of things that we can't control. Number one is we can't control family dynamics, and so sometimes that's what is going to stall the process. Mm. That's something that we can begin to try to manage before someone's passed away, but one of the bigger reasons is, and something we talk about a lot with clients, is to really look at your stuff in your house. Mm. And start looking at, you know, cleaning up some of your stuff or getting rid of some of your stuff. Do you really need five of those things? So one of the things that really takes a lot of time is getting the house ready to sell or getting the house ready to move in for whoever's going to move into it. There's a lot of stuff in the house. And so trying to deal with all of that takes a really long time. And then the second thing that we see a lot of is that people have just a huge amount of accounts. Mm. Now, I'm not trying to give you investment advice or say you shouldn't have this many or that many accounts. But when you look at it, do you really need all five of those bank accounts, and do they really need to be at different banks?
Right.
Can you start working with a financial advisor and really put your IRAs, your investments and things all in one place? That makes it just so much easier. And then the other thing that makes it a lot easier is if you have personal relationships, whether that be with your banker, whether that be you have a financial advisor who you work with, because I'm oftentimes, or my clients are oftentimes, trying to be on the phones with different financial institutions, and we get a different person every time. We have to go through the phone tree every time. Mm. Just because I'm an attorney doesn't mean I have a special line to, you know, any of these institutions. So I sit on hold just the same way you do. And so if we have somebody who we can actually call and work with, to help us through how we move these accounts along, really makes a huge difference in how long something's going to take.
Okay. Well, so is there anything else we should know about, probate?
You
always need probate.
So you don't always need probate. So there is those runarounds that we had talked about. If you have joint ownership on all of your accounts, you have beneficiary designations on all of your accounts.
That's a way to avoid probate. Yep. Just having an up-to-date beneficiary.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So we can use a lot of those tools in order to avoid probate. Again, in order to make sure that it goes towards your intent, we need to make sure that they're remaining up to date and as things change. But we can avoid probate.
Does this so this all kind of works in conjunction with beneficiaries, but also some kind of a basic will?
That's exactly it. Yep. Yeah. You always want to have a basic will because
the beneficiary designation isn't going to handle everything.
Exactly. Beneficiary designation is not going to handle everything. And what if it ends up being over $100,000 or something like that? We never want it to go to the statute.
Why is that the magic number, 100,000?
So we were talking about this here in Washington State, that if what is going through probate is under $100,000, then we have a small estate affidavit that can now avoid probate.
But anything over $100,000... And that's easy. If you have a house that's worth $500,000, there you go.
That's exactly right. So we want to make sure that everything's always up to date, and that as values change. So, yes, we have a lot of clients who bought their house for $30,000 and now it's grown to be, you know,
$1 million.
Right. And so so it's really important that we have things in place, and then the will is ultimately, hopefully, a safeguard if we've tried to avoid probate. Will is a safeguard so that if we had something going through probate, then your voice is heard rather than reverting to the statute and for the state to say who's going to close the estate and where does it go.
for the house, the way to handle the beneficiary, just what, put them on the title, put that person you love on the title? Is that a quick and easy way to handle the house?
So again, if you put them on the title, there's two things. Number one is that make sure that that is your intention, that person's going to get the entire house. So you are gifting the house, number one. But number two, there is a tax implication specifically for that one. Mm. So when you purchased your home, so we will go back to the, I purchased my home for $30,000. Now it's worth $1 million. Well, if you gift the house during your lifetime, which is what it is when you put your child on the title, then they receive it at the cost basis of $30,000. So that means that when they go to sell it, then they will have to pay capital gains tax on the amount of growth that's happened since you purchased the home. Mm. Versus if you did not do that and had them inherit it, then they would inherit it at the cost basis of whatever it was worth when you passed away. So we said that was $1 million. So now when they go to sell it, they actually don't pay any capital gains on it, or they only pay capital gains on how much that it's grown since you've passed away. Mm. So there could be a really major tax implication.
Yeah.
So we always want to make sure that in these plans, we're looking at it holistically rather than I just want to avoid probate or I just want to get this thing to whoever I want to give it to. Mm. So there's a lot more to look at.
A lot more to look at and a lot more to discuss as we're going through just all kinds of things. Just a huge list of issues that Danielle Olero wanted to talk with us. She's filling in for Paul Grant this week. People are intrigued by your firm's approach to planning with purpose. How do people get in touch with you, Danielle?
Yeah, so they're welcome to get to our website, which is planningwithpurposeinc.com. And there's a lot of ways to get in touch with us there. So we'd be happy
and
to
also
chat with
legacyandfaith.com.
And legacyandfaith.com,
the one,
yes.
One associated with this show. Okay, yeah. More next week with Danielle on the Legacy and Faith Show.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.